Accession number 27097, Reel 2.
Maurice Grattan, Reel 2. So it's the 29th of May.
Yeah, on the 29th we were starting to evacuate. And
what have you been doing? I mean, from the 20th or something? I mean, you've been...
Well, we've been trying to round up Germans wherever they were, but as I told you, didn't know whether they were in the back of you, the front of you, where they were.
So were you working? I mean, you were working like infantry, really, weren't you?
Beg pardon?
Were you working like infantry?
Yes, yeah. Yes.
And yeah. You had your officer with you, did you?
Yes.
Yeah.
Then we went, on the 29th, we start to evacuate. We went down right across the mountains.
Who was leading you?
Who was what?
Who was leading you?
Our major was, Major Maddox was our top officer. The other officer we had was called Webb Boeing. He was a colonel, but he flew off the island after he took charge from General Freiberg. The general flew out, and Webb Boeing took over just for a couple of days, then he flew out.
Major Maddox was walking.
Major Maddox was with us.
And he was walking with you,
wasn't he? Yes.
Did you think you were going to be able to evacuate?
No, when we came within about 5 miles of the beachhead, there was an army officer said there that, you know, told us we had to do rear guard. And the remainder of the troops that were passing through was throwing down their weapons, and, you know, we were left a choice, you know. Anyway, we were forced right back to within, I would say, within 500 yards of the beach. On the night of the 31st of May.
And what sort of German troops were they that you were up against?
Well, they were a lot of Austrians, and they were they had everything and we had nothing really. That's what it landed up, yeah. Really.
What sort of weapons had they got?
Oh, they had all the modern, up to date things, you know. I mean, it was all landed from the air and then from the sea. We got down to within 800 yards of the beach on the 31st. And on the 1st of June, I was taken prisoner.
Right. How were you taken prisoner? What happened?
It was 10 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
And there were some Australians, myself, and my pal down in Exeter.
Who's that?
Rowlands.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we were taken prisoner.
How did they treat you? Were they...
We had no food, and we were then marched back right across the island, which took 2 days, to a camp where some Italians had been prisoners at one time.
What and sort of state were you in?
Very poor at the time. Gets back to there, and we laid up in the olive groves then from the 3rd of June till about the 15th, 16th of June. Then the Germans took us down to Ceuta, and we were put on a boat then over to Piraeus.
Right. Had you any idea where you were going?
No.
What was it like at Ceuta Bay when you went back there?
Well, there was a lot of wrecks and that in the harbour, but otherwise it was still functioning.
Was it all well organised, this German movement of prisoners?
Not really. The old worry, I think, of the majority of British troops that we were going to be torpedoed or something by our own ships, you know, going across to Greece.
There was a lot of naval activity, wasn't there?
Oh, yeah, yes. We get over to Piraeus. They had some of us unloading ammunition, and then we were put into a barracks right adjoining a main road, and the frightening part of it, there was no electricity or anything like that, and the shutters were pulled down, and there was just room for you to sit up or lie down and not anything else.
What was the mood like among you? Because you were a mixture, were you?
Oh, yeah, we were a mixture then.
Yeah.
You know, I think the general mood was rather disappointed to the fact that Crete happened, you see, which, in my opinion, this is just my opinion, that the... When Greece was evacuated, the majority of the troops, for quickness, was offloaded to Crete without any weapons or anything to avoid the quickness, to avoid them taking across the Med to Alexandria. And, of course, the majority of the troops on Crete then, if they'd been fully armed and... you know, as should have been, would have given the Germans a run for the money, you know. So there was a lot of despondency amongst the troops, and they were a bit disappointed, you know. And
they were a bit angry with the...
Yeah, angry with the administration, the
administration,
yeah, really.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then we... on the 20th... or the 21st, that was my birthday, I remember. We heard a lot of activity outside because this barracks was very near the main road. And we didn't realise then at the time. But then the Germans had that day just invaded Russia. And they were bringing troops back from Greece and Crete and storming up the roads and that with tanks and everything that they had, you know. Then we went about a couple of days later, they put us on cattle trucks, 56 in a cattle truck, and sent us to Salonika. The journey took 5 days because the rails had been bombed and whatnot, and you were just let out the truck once a day. I got to Salonika and went to get out of the train, and I couldn't walk. I was paralysed. The Germans came along with a horse and cart, and there was about a dozen of us or so, and we were put onto this cart.
Were you in pain, or were you just not able to move your legs?
No, I wasn't well, and was sent up then into the camp in Salonika. That they had a large building as a medical centre, and that was full of wounded and people with ulcers and various things. I lied on the floor and couldn't really move at all. And a German came along with a British doctor, and the German had a look at me, and I didn't know what he was talking about. He said that I had... Earthy Minnethosa. And they then, as it was so crowded there, I was put into a separate room where there's four other chaps from different regiments. And I still couldn't move. I couldn't move hand or feet. After about 3 weeks, a fortnight or 3 weeks, I did get some feeling in my feet. But meantime, the other four pals died, and I was the only one left there.
Really?
And this German came along and scraped the bottom of my foot with some sharp instrument, I don't know what it was then, and I had a feeling in one of my feet. And he just walked away and said, good, or something to that effect. And within the next week, 10 days, I got feeling back in my other feet. But I could only walk a few yards. I used to fall over.
What do you think was causing it? Do you know? Well, I
really got a feeling that when I was unloading ammunition after we got to Paris, I was so thirsty. There was an old tap in the yard there, and I drank some of the water of it. That was the only thing I could really think had done something wrong to me.
And those other people in the hospital room who died, do you remember any of their names?
I'm afraid I can't. No, I was too far gone myself. Yeah. Then I was discharged from there, but kept falling over, but went down to the barracks nearest the gate, mm-hmm. which I lied on the floor. But my flesh in my side, the bone came through because I couldn't manoeuvre, you know. But that eventually healed. And we used to stand by, well, myself and other people used to stand down by the gate because they used to take some of the prisoners that was in the camp there out working. And when they used to come into the camp again, the Greek civilians used to throw bananas or oranges to them. And when they came in the gates, the Germans used to take it all off of them. One day in particular, which was most interesting really, was down at the gate, gradually getting a bit better from the paralysis and that, or whatever I had. And this German came up to myself and this other guy, I don't know who his name was, and had collected all the goodies that the Greeks had to give the troops that were coming back into the camp, and told us to take it over to the officers that was about 500 yards across the other side. They were in a separate unit. So what you do when you're starving? We had these two baskets of fruit, and I had a tunic on. Of course, the old thing was you put your hand in the basket and put an orange or a banana inside your coat. Gets over to the officers, and officer said, oh, thank you very much. How your lad's been treated and this and that and the other. And then we made our way back across the camp. Not only to make our way back across the camp, but ran into this German that, you know, and he pulled his revolver out. He pulled all the stuff outside that we'd nicked and was going to shoot us there on the spot, you see. Instead of that, he made us walk back to where the officers was, and he said to the officer, did you give these chaps some of this fruit? And the officer realized the situation and said, yes, we did. And he let us off the hook. So that was the first near squeak.
How did you feel feel about the officers being treated so differently to you?
I didn't give it much thought, not really. Anyway, was there about another, I would say, until September in that camp. And
were you getting stronger?
I was getting stronger at the time. Then was moved up to Austria, a place called Wolfsburg, Stalag 18A. There was in the camp about a week and was sent on a working party with 23 other personnel. Went out on this working party, and it was a quarry. I'd only been there about a day, and I felt really ill again and had pleurisy. Then, luck would have it, about 2 or 3 days later, the German came in the barrack room, which was luxury compared to what we'd had before.
Right. So you were in, was this
with a working party.
Oh, with a working party, yeah.
And he called out my name and four other naval personnel. We had to report, we had to go back to the camp. We got back to the camp. I reported sick to a British doctor, and he said that they had nothing and could do nothing. About a week or a fortnight later, we were transferred down to Wilhelmshaven, down the other side of Germany, for interrogation. We had 6 weeks interrogation, or solitary confinement interrogation.
So tell me about those.
And I was still ill with the pleurisy.
So tell me about, you say 6 weeks of interrogation. What were your days like there at Wilhelmshaven?
We were treated very fairly there.
You were in solitary
There was no torture for interrogation. It was straightforward, you know. Where do you sail from, and this and that and the other, and what ships you were on, and this and that and the other. And, of course, we've always been told that we only need and should always give your name and number, that's all, which I did. Anyway, one day, they had been there about a week, and the German came out, and I wasn't eating my food. And he said, "Bist du krank?" And I didn't know what it meant. And anyway, they sent an English interpreter up and asked if I was sick, and I said yes. And the next day, they sent me down to Wilhelmshaven Naval Hospital. I was very surprised when I got there. There was, the naval hospital was full of civilians and naval personnel, a big waiting room. I would say there must have been 50 of us in there, in this waiting room. And I thought, I had a guard with me, and I thought everybody was staring, and I thought, well, I'll be there all day, and I couldn't really, felt like sticking it, you know, I was feeling pretty ill. Anyway, they x-rayed me. And they took me before everyone else, which I was delighted with. And I'll always remember, it was the 11th of November, and I was coming back to the camp with this German guard, and a civilian tried to assault us, or assault me. Calling me an English swine and this and that and the other, you know. And the German had to take his rifle off his shoulder and ward him off. And the next day I was sent down to the hospital and I had two guards. I came back from there and was sent to a naval officer's... Well, the old batch of us was sent to a naval officer's camp at Bremenhaven. When I got there, I reported sick and I saw Surgeon, Lieutenant Commander and Knight of the Royal Navy. And he wanted...
Surgeon, Commander, Knight.
Yeah, the Royal Navy. And he wanted to know my medical history. And he said, I'll have to put you into a lazarette. That's an hospital just outside the camp. I went into this hospital and there was a New Zealand doctor there and general chaps that were unfortunate and dying and what have you. I gets in there, very nice ward, and I was x-rayed and several times and they found that this fluid and that was drying up. The camp was very well run by a Serb surgeon, which used to train the Germans' doctors, especially the ones back from the Russian front, or the ones that were going to the Russian front.
What did you hear about the Russian front at that time?
Well, we knew it was going on, but and we did get bits of information to the positions like Odessa and places that they were, the Germans were overrunning, you know.
And this naval officers' camp, I mean, you were in the hospital there, was this for British naval officers?
British naval officers, Lieutenant Commander Knight, he was a British.
Yes.
We went up into the hospital and there was a New Zealand doctor there. And, of course, the German doctors used to come round as well. But the mainstay of their medical unit there was a Yugoslavian. He was a surgeon. And there was a chap next bed to me that was shot up rather badly and was likely to die. And I went down and saw the first operation I ever seen in my life. Their operation theatre, they had a corridor with a glass panel. And anyone that wanted to go down to see, you could walk in the corridor and see the surgeon operating through the glass. Now, this poor fellow, he was next to me, and I thought he was never going to make it. He was off a merchant ship called the Voltaire. And he was bringing up blood and vomiting and whatever. Anyway, we went down to see what was going to happen. And they put a clamp on this poor chap. And the surgeon got out the saw and start sawing the ribs off, you know. Apparently the ribs had been puncturing the lungs, you see. And he came back and he lied next bed to me and I thought he was going to die during the night, but luckily he survived.
Yeah. Do you remember his name?
No, I'm afraid I can't now. And anyway, I stayed up in that hospital for about 3 months.
You were really quite ill, weren't you? This was pleurisy, was it?
Yeah. Then I was transferred back to the camp, the officers' camp at Bremenhaven, which consisted of nearly all officers and naval officers. And while I was there, there was a Marine officer there called Curtis.
Curtis.
And he he said to me, he said, would you do me a favour? And I said, I'll do whatever. And they used to count the lower ranking, like myself and anyone that was in the camp, separate to the officers. We had like two compounds. And he said, will you stand in my compound for me? He said, I've been selected for an escape tunnel. So I said, yes. He said, well, the old system is, as you see, he said, that they count you first. He said, and they count us after. He said, if we can get enough guys to stand in for us, they won't realise that we've gone. So I stood in for him for three or four times.
Really?
Got through into their compound and stood in and was counted until one of the officers was recaptured, and then we realised that it couldn't be done anymore. Anyway, then after then, I was transferred to Stalag 8B in the Poland border. And I got there and was put into a sick compound. Got in the sick compound and the compounds were open every day. You could walk around the camp, you know, and piled up with a pal of mine, Robert Gray, that was in the Marines from Chatham, and a chap from Clutton in Bristol, called Palfrey, Douglas Palfrey.
Were they in the sick compound?
They were in the sick compound. And we used to, muck in and get around there. Anyway, the next thing that really exciting happened was they used to have a compound which the chaps used to work in the camp, like making rough coffins and things like that. You know, they had a great pile of wood, you know, at the end of the compound, you see. Anyway, I don't know whose bright idea it was, but occasionally we used to get a Red Cross parcel. And if we had a Red Cross parcel, the best parcel we possibly could have was a Canadian. And they used to have Klim milk and coffee in and biscuits and everything. A lovely parcel. But the other thing was, there was nothing for you to have your coffee with, because you never had a fire. There was no fires. You got nothing to warm it or anything. Anyway, I think it was my friend up at Clutton, I think it was his idea that we should get some of the wood that was right under the machine gun tower, you know, in Block 7. So I'll always remember we went down to get some of this wood. And it was in planks. Yes, you know, they had it for various things, coffins, different things. So we gets down there, myself and him and Robert Gray, we went down as these chaps used to have, they were privileged because they used to get a tin of soup extra. But the general diet every day in the camp for myself and that was, I suppose we had sweet soup 300 days out of the 365. And it was not what you call soup. It was just chunks that big floating on the top of a dustbin. They used to feed it from a dustbin.
I'll just stop you there. Maurice Grattan, end of reel two.